I am so excited and grateful for our special guest today. This is Vladimir Zukovic. Vladimir is the founder of the Blue Lotus Meditation and Mindfulness Center. He has garnered both a national and international following as he continues to teach and share the Dharma with compassion, loving kindness, and sincerity. How are you, Vladimir?
Oh, what a wonderful introduction, Jisun. Thank you so much.
Of course. I'm doing
very well. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm so honored you said yes, and you're giving and sharing your time here. Let's start with our first question. I love this question because I think I understand a lot more of what is underlying someone and their embodiment of their presence here on this planet this time around. And the question for you, Vladimir, is how would you describe your essence?
I would hope it's kindness, you know, in essence, essentially, right? It would be kind.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, and it took me a little bit of time to kind of to nurture that a little bit.
Okay.
You know, I think most of the time as little kids, you know, when you see little kids on the playground, they're kind and generous and warm-hearted and so forth. But, you know, maybe as I got a little bit older, like the teen years and so forth, and, you know, it may be like most teenagers kind of like, all about me, the ego,
mm-hmm.
I, me, mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it just took a little bit of realization, like, you know what, that's not me.
Mm.
You know, I really am not a self-centered, give it all to me. So I, essentially, you know, or my essence, I try to be as kind as I can and understanding and forgiving.
Wow.
So that's what I try to be anyway.
Kindness, understanding, and forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Are there specific instances or experiences you've had in your life that make those the top three for you?
You know what? There is. And this is typically when I would interview for like retail positions back in the old days or whatever, I always bring this one up, like where kindness would kind of come in and maybe not... such a hardline attitude was, I worked at a large cellular telephone company.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine sometimes people getting unexpected bills, especially with college students, right?
Uh-huh.
I had a parent come in and they're like, and he came in very pleasantly, right? And he really did. And it was an exorbitant amount of money on his bill. He's like, anything you can do about it? I'm like, absolutely. I just wrote it all off.
Wow.
You know, I just credited it all off. I was like, here's your month. You pay your monthly bill, you know,
mm-hmm.
what was, you know, appropriate, but all these extra charges, let's just get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and his attitude after it was done was like, wow, that is not something I expected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I expected that, you know, that hard line. You know, that, well, you know, you're stuck with that bill, you know, that's what you did. That's what you saw. No, where does that get people?
Yeah.
You know, where does that get, you know, how does that promote well-being and trust and compassion towards somebody else? If you're just, you know, always so hard,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially for mistakes, you know, or, you know, just being unaware sometimes, you know, why should you have to suffer greatly for that?
Mm.
That could have been somebody's rent or somebody's meals and stuff like that. So it's one by one,
mm-hmm.
right? One by one that you can just spread kindness and just little a little acts of generosity and understanding and forgiveness and grace.
Mm-hmm.
That promotes well-being.
Yeah.
You know, and that was even before the mindfulness, to be honest with you. That was
wow.
really before that.
Mm-hmm.
That was before I even started really delving into the practice a
mm-hmm.
lot more.
Yeah.
Than, you know, like I do now, but yeah.
So speaking of, what led you to open the mindfulness practice?
The benefits that I've received,
mm-hmm.
or maybe how the Buddha would describe it, what he's lost, what I've, you know, I got rid of anxiety. I got
mm-hmm.
rid of, you know, anger or, you know, uncontrollable anger and, you know, sadness and so forth, or uncontrollable sadness, you know,
mm-hmm.
just living in, you know, those points of despair. And so the benefits that I've received, you know, how I've nurtured and grown, you know, just by those studies and those realizations and conversations that I just have with people in general, you know, that sad, depressed and so forth, just really made me kind of like, you know, there's really a big need for this, you know. People want to be happy. You know, everybody wants to be happy, but sometimes we get it in our own minds that I'm not deserving of happiness. Oh, I deserve to be where I am, you know, miserable and you know, bottom rung or whatnot. And that's not true, you know, and we all have our place, right? We all have that openness and compassion within us, but sometimes that despair that we are constantly bombarded with, just noise, you know, feelings of unworthiness, like, oh, I see these people on TV and I'm not them. Let me work hard to be like them, but that's not you, right? Be happy where you are. And it's easy to say, be happy where you are, you know, it's easy to say. But it takes effort. You know, it takes a little mind shift. Like, oh, I'm okay the way I am. And it took a little bit of time for me to realize that too.
Is that, is that where the mindfulness came in for you? Is that how you got to where you are?
To some degree. So my mom is a practicing Buddhist and she's been a Buddhist since like the mid 80s. And, and so I've had some exposure to it even back then and, and so forth. But yeah, it really didn't resonate with me. It didn't open up to me or unfold myself until, you know, about 7 or 8 years ago now at this point.
Wow. So you grew up with her practicing Buddhism.
Yeah.
And it didn't resonate for you as you were growing older or growing up. No. Were there moments where her beliefs or philosophy would clash with things that you were experiencing?
So, yes.
Okay.
So, this was, again, this is, I was in my formative teenage years, so a lot of things clash, doesn't matter what they are, right? You know, you're always going to clash with your parents and so forth. But, you know, it would be like, oh, well, somebody just insulted me, or somebody just, you know, basically hurt my ego in some sense, you know, let me get back at them. Let me do some kind of, you know, spiteful action towards them. And she'd be like, where does that get you? Well, it gets me feeling good. Yeah, but then that just creates a cycle. Like, now they feel bad, so they have to get back at you and so forth. So, you know, that's where, you know, my mindset was back then. It was like, you know, kind of like what we experience and what we see a lot today. You know, somebody stepped on my toes, you know, and let me get back at them. Or there's a lot of noise, let me be louder so I can be heard. So, again, it was, I'd seen it, I experienced it, but it didn't resonate until I was ready to accept it, you know, or try it.
So, okay. How would you describe life purpose?
Oh, purpose. So made me think about that. So purpose. And I also started thinking about the word meaning. Okay, so we often use those interchangeably.
They're not the same.
They're not the same, right? You can have, there can be a purpose, but there can be no meaning. And so sometimes if we want to do the old, it's not geometry, but algebra, I guess, where they do the Venn diagrams, right? Yeah. Sometimes they can be interchangeable or overlapping or intersecting. Sometimes they can be separate. You know, so this pencil, right? It has a purpose, but it doesn't necessarily have meaning. Right? The purpose is writing. I can write something down. What I write down probably, hopefully has meaning, whether it's a grocery list or some thoughts or whatnot. So purpose, a person can have a purpose. You can get up every morning and do whatever job you do, and it has a purpose. Feed your family, feed yourself, pay your bills. But does it have meaning? Right? So meaning is something that only you or a person or a sentient being can ascribe to something. You know, and that's where the Venn diagram kind of comes in, right? Because that's where you can overlap it. You know? So I think it's important to try to find meaning in how we go about our lives, because when we have purpose, you can probably get burned out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But if you have meaning, it gives a little bit more oomph. Right? A little bit more like, yeah, let me get up in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, 20, mm-hmm. maybe about 20 minutes early. We're not going to push it, but let me get up, you know, and do what I can to help, you know, in some way or form.
Wow. Would you say you feel aligned to that, where that Venn diagram meets meaning and purpose on a daily basis? Yeah. Or does it happen naturally, or is that something you have to remind yourself of?
So like any person, so I would hope that there's a significant overlap. Right. I really hope that there is. And but like anybody, sometimes I can feel a little bit, what am I doing? You know, and so forth. And that's where I kind of think of the meaning. That's where I kind of jump back and like, oh, well, what's the meaning? And the meaning is, and sometimes it doesn't have to be so grandiose. Like, oh, I'm out here to save everybody. Meaning can just be, I'm here to be kind. And that's all it really is. That's all it needs to be, I think. And sometimes I think that sets people back, right? They want to have meaning in their lives. But I think our society kind of pushes, you have to be the best. It has to be the biggest idea. It has to be revolutionary or innovative or anything like that. And I think that mindset can set people back from having a meaning in some of their things and in some of their activities. And so I think if we can just bring it back to the essence, just being kind. That's enough meaning. I mean, holding the door for somebody who has maybe armful of groceries, that's kindness. That can be meaning, right? I help somebody with their door, you know, so they didn't stumble and fall or whatnot. So it doesn't have to be, you know, something large and you know, a large scale meaning, you know, being kind is just, that's large scale right there. Think about that. How many people are, you know, want to be kind, but they're afraid to. Yeah. Yeah. Think about, yeah. So think about, and maybe you've heard, maybe you've experienced that, oh, I'm too kind. People walk all over me, you know? And so sometimes people get, you know, saddened. Like, I'm doing everything for everybody else and nobody does anything for me, you know? And but if we reframe that, I'm doing this for you because I do see you. I do see you, who you are, but I'm also doing it for me. And that's the kindness. So it's a two-way street. And sometimes we forget that. It's not to say we need to be abused now at the same time. You know, we don't want to, you know,
can't pour from advantage of. Cup, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So where does purpose and meaning align for you? Like, where is the overlap for you? If you were to describe it in one sentence or two, what does that sound like?
Just in my actions. So I try to be aware that who I'm looking at is not necessarily who I'm looking at. I see you, but that's not you, right? You are all up in here. This is just a physical form. And so when I try to make that action or that overlap between purpose and meaning, I try to focus on the meaning. I'm being kind to you because you are deserving to be kind. You're being treated kindly. And that's where the purpose, you know, my purpose, right? My actions of being kind overlap with my essence of being kind or my meaning of being kind. So just try to get it, you know. It's not 100%. You know, okay. I'm sure there's probably some slivers someplace.
You know,
maybe not. I'm still a person, but I do my best.
Okay, so where meaning and purpose align or overlap for you, Vladimir, is understanding with greater, deeper insight that the person you're looking at really isn't what you're looking at. And so aligning your essence of being kind with the insight or the awareness that there's something greater. For you, that's where the meaning and purpose overlap. Okay. It's just in the way that you show up, your actions.
It is. And so our actions and how we treat people, that can align with a person's purpose and meaning. And it's up to us individually, how we want to do that. How we want to have those two circles overlap.
You know what question I think would help clarify a little bit for me is why? Why is kindness so important to you?
Remember the golden rule? Right? We always hear about that when we're little, right? You treat others how you want to be treated. And so to me, that is why. That is the reason why. It is because we often hear that the world is hard. It's cruel, it's self-centered, right? And if we keep hearing that, we start to believe it. And that gives us a certain paradigm, a certain callousness to ourselves, right? Oh, it's all about me, right? But if we do follow the golden rule, right? Just, treat others as we want to be treated, that's kindness, right? Maybe the world can actually be a better place. And I know that kind of sounds utopian or idealistic, but what's the alternative? Dystopian, right? All about ourselves and just take whatever I can and not worry about somebody else. We are that somebody else. We are the others. As much as we others, other people, to them, we are the others as well. And that keeps a separation. Doesn't allow the kindness to blow because if I to grow, because if I'm viewing you as another and not as myself, then that just builds up that callousness, that hardness, that egocentric, let me keep it for me. It's all about me.
Got it.
I
Okay.
hope that helps.
No, it totally does. Absolutely. So, Vladimir, for you, kindness is about removing the callousness from this world and helping us to move from a paradigm where we remember the oneness that we're all in it together. That's beautiful. That's really, really beautiful. So, as we were talking, Vladimir, and I already knew this, but I definitely want to speak it out loud. The pink elephant for me is that you have this aura about you. You're very, I mean, yes, the kindness is definitely there in the way you speak, but you have this gentleness and this peacefulness way about you. I'm wondering, and you've already alluded to this before when you were younger, you're definitely not this way. But I'm wondering if there was a time period, even after your adolescence, where you were not this way and you were a different type of, like, if I met Vladimir 20 years ago, who would I have met? What was he like?
Oh, that's an interesting question. There would be some similarities. Okay, there really would be. You would still see the same person who was loyal or who is loyal, who would, oh, you know what? Jisun needs me to go do something. Let me go put this aside and make sure she's okay or somebody else. That would still be there. But there would be a little bit more of the party attitude.
A party attitude.
Be a little bit more of that in there.
Okay.
Yeah, you would find a little bit more of the, let's go to the disco, let's go to the club, and so forth, see what's going on and whatnot. But again, the essence of me would still be there, and that wouldn't be hard to find.
Okay.
You know, I think somebody referred to me as, what was the word? Accommodating.
Okay.
And they said, oh, he's very accommodating. Because I didn't mind. You know, it's like, you know, I'm happy to help somebody. And even back then, you may got a little snide comment like, I got to go back and help somebody else.
But you would still do it.
I'd still go do it.
Got it. Yeah. So, Vladimir, for that younger version of yourself, or maybe it's even the Vladimir I'm looking at today that we're seeing today, what would you say has been the greatest challenge of your life?
Letting go.
Anything specific?
Just a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a big colloquial term, I guess. You know, a lot of things. But letting go of those attachments of, you know, somebody did this to me. I'm not going to forget. You know, I'm going to keep that in the back of my mindset. And adopting a new lifestyle. That's not easy.
No.
You know, that is certainly not easy. You know, it, what do they say? 3 weeks to make a habit or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess if you do it longer than that, it's a lifestyle. But the shifting of the mindset from the I, me, mine to the we, ours, everybody, I guess. After it goes to, right? But, you know, the wholeness, oneness of everybody.
Yeah. So letting go of when someone would do something to hurt you or cross a boundary, things like that were difficult. And transitioning to a new lifestyle has been the most difficult part for you.
Yeah. And even, you know, even sometimes some career changes, you know, would be hard. You know, even if it was the same type of field, just the new people, new procedures, like, oh, well, we used to do it this way, and that's the right way, you know. So again, letting go of how things used to be, it's really how they are.
Yeah, letting go.
And that's what's hard sometimes.
What would you say your emotional home is now? So mine used to be guilt. When I would struggle with relationships, my emotional home was always guilt. I would always come back to feeling guilty for things. Is there one for you that comes to mind?
Sometimes it's uncertainty.
Okay.
Like, am I doing the right thing?
Resonate with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Am I doing the right thing to help somebody else? You know, and it kind of goes down to the kindness, right? Because we want to help people, you know, at least, you know, I think, you know, we all want to try to do our best to help others as well. And one of the things that we want to say is yes all of the time. And yes isn't always the helpful, you know, answer.
Yeah.
You know, and so sometimes, and I can't dwell there, and I have to remind myself I can't dwell on that too long. And so when we say it's my home, it's like I'll sit there for a little bit, but like, oh, you know what? I've already made a commitment. I've already said something. And now I just have to like kind of let it flow.
Yeah.
Because again, yes is not always the appropriate answer.
Yeah. You
know, people want to hear a yes, but they may not personally be ready for a yes. And that may end up doing more harm than good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, absolutely. Really poignant. What would you say outside of meditating has been the most fulfilling way for you to cultivate positive emotions and navigate quote unquote negative ones?
As I get rid of the fly, right? To cultivate those positive, like, so outside, I just enjoy being around people. You know, that's a positive for me. A lot of people, you know, sometimes they can get a little, you know, little anxiety around other people. So that's I don't know if it's not make myself happy, allow myself to be happy, but just those positive emotions, like, again, serving others is really is positive to me. So part of the the trip that we were just on, you know, we fed, you know, mm-hmm. we fed some homeless, you know, along the ways, and just, mm-hmm. and it was nice because a lot of times people just walk by, past, you know, think about, you know, you see somebody,
yeah,
you know, with the sign out or whatnot, and just, how does that make somebody feel? Right? They're just overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
And we would just sit there and just talk with them, you know, whether it's one or two or three, you know, just individuals, just,
yeah,
you know, it's not the meal, it's the recognition, the acknowledgement that they exist. And so that's mm-hmm. how I, one of the ways I've recently anyway, that, you know, I developed or nurtured those positive attributes, but negatively, realizing that negativity, again, can be very mm-hmm. related to perspective. Again, just because I'm told no doesn't mean it's a negative. You know, there's a lesson in being told yes or no. You know, again, just because you're always told yes doesn't mean it's a good thing, right? It's like winning all of the time. Mm-hmm. You don't learn how to be a good loser, right? Or being told no all the time, those negative emotions, those negative attributes, just realizing that, give it time, it may be a positive. So don't look at that immediate time. Give it some space.
Yeah.
And see what grows.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I love that. So when you are experiencing negative emotions, you like to give it space and take the lesson from it, see what grows. Yeah. And for you, you cultivate positive emotions by being with people, to serving others, recognizing others in this world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Vladimir.
Of course.
So you and I connected because of mindfulness and meditation. And I know how extremely important meditating is for me to take that space to tune into myself. And to understand how to connect with my heart, with my spirit. And mindfulness specifically is about letting go of that judgment, right? And being present, embodying your presence without the judgment.
Right.
Do you have any tips, Vladimir, for people who have trouble sitting down to meditate?
Give it time. Don't be afraid. Or don't stop because you feel uncomfortable or you're experiencing some form of discomfort. That's a normal part of the process. You know, we're so often expecting an immediate result. Let me take a pill because I have a headache and 20 minutes later it's gone. But we're dealing with ourselves. And a lot of times we're dealing with a lot of long-term trauma or societal imprints, and it takes a while for those to get away or for them to just dissipate and move downstream where they don't need to be. So give it time and don't be afraid of discomfort, because it's actually you starting to recognize, oh, this isn't quite, you know, healthy for me. It's kind of like choking on smoke, right? Your body knows it's not good for you. Right. Got to get rid of it if you're at a campfire or something, right?
Yeah.
So give it time. Let it
okay.
dissipate on its own.
Yeah. So just to clarify, it's not the body saying the meditation is not good for you when you find discomfort. When you find discomfort, it's what is it that we're finding discomfort with?
Could be any kind of situations. You know, something that maybe in our own personal history that we may find discomforting. One of the examples I like to think of is, remember in sixth grade, getting called up in math class, right? Go do the problem on the board, right? Now I don't like to public speak, you know, maybe somebody doesn't like to public speak because of that. And so maybe they start working on meditation. So I can become a better public speaker to get rid of that anxiety. And part of that recollection may be, oh, I'm thinking about that time when I was in sixth grade. That's an uncomfortable time because, you know, 28 other kids in the class looking and laughing at me because I can't, you know, do a math problem. And so that's what I'm kind of, that kind of discomfort, you know, let that, you know, we don't live there anymore.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you for that advice. That is extremely helpful for those of us who struggle in the beginning with meditating, because I know I did. It was hard to just sit and to meditate because my mind was going 100 miles a minute. But to have patience and to give it time was exactly what I needed. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Get that monkey
so,
mind.
So, Vladimir, I am so grateful. Yes, the monkey mind, exactly. I'm so grateful that you are here and you're sharing your presence with us today. For those of us that want to connect with you more, want to learn more about your service, your gifts to this world, where can we send them?
So our website is www.bluelotusmeditation.us. So it's not a .com, it's a .us.
Okay.
You can find us right there.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Any social media handles that you'd like to share?
Facebook and Instagram. At Blue Lotus Center. So, yes.
Excellent.
And YouTube as well.
Excellent.
That's Blue Lotus Meditation.
And YouTube. That's right. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Vladimir, for your time today.
You're very welcome, Jisa.
I'll speak to you soon.
Okay.